This is Emily Wright, features and global editor for EG, and I'm joined today by Brendan Wallace and Brad Gwawi, who became two of the most talked about players in both the property and technology spheres in May this year, when news of their real estate-only tech fund Fifth Wall's first raise hit the headlines. It seemed to come out of nowhere. Of course, as is often the case, that wasn't the case, but rather a combination of a year's work behind the scenes, which paid off as these two former Blackstone associates launched with a $212 million raise and buy-in from some of the property sector's biggest players, including CBRE. Fifth Wall has now also launched an early stage accelerator program and advocates a fresh approach to investment in a traditional industry. Their goal, in their own words, is to act as the connective tissue between the world's largest owners and operators of physical space and the entrepreneurs and innovators redefining how the world uses and interacts with their environments. Now, there are others who would say they're doing the same, but few with as much clout and resource as these guys. So, Brendan, Brad, thank you very much for joining me. Well, joining me-ish. I'm sure that people will be able to tell that you are currently in LA.
Yeah, we're both currently in LA.
Yeah, and thanks for having us.
Not at all. Thank you very much for finding the time. So the first question is, and I don't know whether people listening into this will know already, but I certainly don't. Could you just explain a bit about the name? Is it sort of an extension of the Fourth Wall? I mean, where does Fifth Wall come from?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely an extension of the Fourth Wall. I mean, I think real estate's traditionally defined as four physical walls. The Fifth Wall sort of represents the digital frontier, sort of the environment that Brendan and I are looking to innovate in and invest in. So yeah, the Fifth Wall is sort of yet to be defined, but I think provides, you know, all the opportunity for real estate moving forward.
Great. And how is it going so far? I mean, as I said earlier, you know, I guess in a sort of the grand scheme of things publicly, you're only a few months in, although obviously that's not the case. You haven't come out of nowhere. But since that May news hit the headlines, how has it been for you?
You know, it's been, I'd say, fairly, this is Brendan, by the way, it's been fairly consistent with how we've been operating prior. So we effectively started investing in the summer of 2016. We elected to kind of stay private and under the radar, and we really only announced ourselves in May. But at that point, we already had, I think, 8 investments. We've closed a handful more, and we're about to close a number more as well. So, you know, the announcement was obviously we were thrilled with kind of the coverage we got, and I think it was a great validation, both of what we had accomplished, but also of the broader real estate technology venture community. But it's really been kind of business as usual, frankly, for us.
Oh, that's our printer going off in the background there at nearly 10 o'clock at night. So I don't know what that's about, but we shall carry on. On that note, you know, talking about getting your ducks in a row for over a year, can you talk me through the process that happened before that? You know, what made you realize that this was the direction that you wanted to go in? Why did you feel that now was the right time, or rather a year ago, was the right time to launch a real estate specific fund? What was it about the market that made you think this is what we should be doing?
Sure. This is Brendan. I would say what we saw was just an enormous opportunity, both in the scale of the opportunity and the timing of the opportunity. So real estate, largest market in the U.S. and the world, it's 14% of the U.S. economy, the largest asset class, the largest lending category, the largest store of consumer wealth. It's really, really big. And I think we can all agree it is one of the latest adopters of technology. It's a tech laggard. There's tons of inefficiencies. You walk in and out of any building or any office, and you can just spot the inefficiencies. Basically, innovation hasn't touched our physical world in the same way that it has touched our digital world. And so that is just a massive secular opportunity. Mm. I think the other thing we saw was that there weren't really a lot of focused venture capital funds on real estate technology, which was odd to us because you kind of have this enormous industry early in its adoption of technology. And yet, despite that, real estate and hospitality technology has produced, I'd argue, almost more than any other vertical of the venture ecosystem. So there's about $250 billion of public and private real estate and hospitality technology company value, from price Priceline, Expedia, Zillow, Airbnb, WeWork, like when companies work in real estate and hospitality tech, they become enormous. So Brad and I were kind of puzzled by why would there be no funds focused on this category? I mean, there's like 10 venture capital funds focused on education tech, which has produced maybe 1/100 of the enterprise value of real estate tech. And the conclusion that we came to is that the reason for that was twofold. One is sociological. There's just not a lot of people from the real estate industry that work in venture capital. I don't know why that's the case, but they're two industries that just frankly don't overlap. We've really yet in our kind of, you know, 2 years doing this to meet a general partner at another venture fund that has real, meaningful, deep industry experience in the real estate industry. So Brad and I were just fortunate early in our careers to have had a foot in both industries. The second is, I think, more core to what our fund model is, which is real estate tech has kind of a unique risk profile. One, because the industry is such a late adopter, and because what exists today is either low tech or no tech, most ideas in real estate tech are good ideas. So what I mean by that, Emily, is that you don't face in real estate tech the same kind of existential questions you face in most other kinds of venture investing, like the does it work? Can you build it? Is it better than the status quo? Most companies we look at, the answers to all those questions are yes. So it's kind of relatively low technical risk. But what you do have, on the other hand, is enormous go-to-market and distribution risk, which is to say, if you don't have a large corporate partner to adopt your technology, you're likely not going to be successful. So you have commercial brokerage technology, you're backed by the biggest venture funds, you got $100 million, you have the best product, but CBRE does not adopt you, you're not going to be successful. Same thing is true in hospitality with Hilton and Hyatt and Marriott. So we saw this dynamic where a very small number of big enterprise contracts or partnerships completely dictated the outcome. So you had this massive go-to-market risk. So to kind of put a fine point in our strategy was simple. We said, what if we could go out and raise capital from the biggest buyers of real estate technology, the firms that are like themselves influencing the outcomes? And then we'd know what they're likely to adopt, who they're likely to partner with. We'd be able to rapidly accelerate the growth of our portfolio companies with that visibility. And we'd have an ability to kind of view the entire market from a perspective of what the incumbents want and not speculate on what's going to be adopted, because that is really where all the risk hinges in real estate technology venture investing. So that was kind of the core thesis.
Yeah.
And with that, we could have, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that was something that, you know, I think our listeners and our readers are going to be really interested to find out about, and it that makes so much sense. And I think, you know, it would be great to carry on talking about that in a minute, but I just wanted to ask, so when it came to attracting that investment and getting those companies on board, I'm really keen to find out how did you find that process? Was it an easy sell? Were they raring to go? Were they sort of ready to sign on the dotted line, or did you have to persuade the, you know, the CBREs and the Hines to get on board?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. This is Brad speaking, by the way. I think for the partners that we chose, I think the answer to the question was relatively simple in the sense of they realized that technology was going to be a major and driving factor of their business strategy moving forward, and they wanted to partner with or place bets in that ecosystem, but look to do that with a partner like Fifth Wall to help them really navigate the venture ecosystem. But I will say for the conversations that we had with our anchors, we had many other conversations with other real estate owner operators who I think, you know, view the world in a different light. Who I think either kind of said, hey, listen, it's just not what we do, we're real estate guys, and kind of had a more of a let's put our head in the sands approach versus some other ones who just didn't really sort of, I think, have enough options yet to sort of decide how to really approach the market. Mm-hmm. While others have sort of, you know, decided to go in on their own and develop internal in-house corporate VC arms. Because what Fifth Wall was really offering was so unique, providing a multi-tenant corporate option for large corporates to invest in. That's really where the rub came in terms of figuring out the right approach for that investment and sort of the discussions around how to put money to work in the space were really around how Fifth Wall should ultimately be structured. So I think in terms of coming to the conclusion with our anchors, it really stemmed around what the right partnership was and how that should be ultimately put together and what our working relationship really looked like. And I think all that hard work paid off because I think what we have now is a truly differentiated approach to partnering with large corporates, working intimately and programmatically with those large organizations, uncovering the opportunities they're looking to take advantage of in the technology ecosystem, and then Fifth Wall going to work and articulating those needs. So I think getting our corporates to the table, I think was easy because they're highly curated in the sense that they're the ones that I think are most well positioned, and I think have the internal wherewithal and commitment to invest in technology as they see it to be a driving force of the future of their businesses.
And it's probably worth mentioning at this point that as I alluded to at the start of this interview, and as anyone who knows anything about Fifth Wall and you guys will know, is that it's not like you're coming to these players cold either. You both have property experience and expertise, and actually it might just be worth, for the benefit of our listeners, just very quickly start with you, Brad. Your background is?
So my background really started in real estate investment banking. So out of Harvard, I went to go work for UBS. Quickly moved from the investment banking realm into private equity, working in real estate private equity for Tishman Speyer in New York, and then quickly moving on to Starwood Capital out in San Francisco. I left Starwood Capital in 2010 to pursue what I thought was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in investing in the distressed single-family housing space. Obviously, at the time in the U.S., the housing market was at an all-time low, and myself and a few other co-founders thought it presented a unique opportunity to attract institutional capital to essentially invest in foreclosed homes, providing the opportunity to buy homes, fix them up, and ultimately rent them out. We partnered with Blackstone on that initiative and in a company called Invitation Homes, and ultimately became the largest owner and operator of single-family rental homes in the country. Through Invitation Homes, we purchased a little over 50,000 homes in 14 major markets across the U.S., and actually last week it was announced that Invitation Homes was merging with Starwood Waypoint and will now be the largest owner of single-family rentals in the country by multiples with 82,000 homes under management. Really what that opportunity, I think, represents, and I think it's a good, it was a good corollary to what we're doing with Fifth Wall, is that essentially the way we were able to identify, underwrite, purchase, rehab, market, lease, and ultimately manage 50,000+ homes was through technology. Mm-hmm. And I think the result of Invitation Homes, which is essentially, a $20+ billion company, which started in 2012, is a direct correlation of what Brendan alluded to before, is that when technology is applied to the traditional real estate space, large outcomes can occur in relatively short amount of times, and sort of new and interesting results can occur. Institutional single-family rental industry didn't exist 5 years ago, and now it's one of the newest and I think most interesting arenas to invest capital. So I think a great first win in sort of the broader real estate tech ecosystem, despite the fact that it's not a company that's traditionally viewed as a tech play, but I'd make the argument that it definitely was.
Great, thank you. And Brendan, your background.
So my background, like Brad's, is a hybrid of real estate and technology. So after Princeton, I started my career at Goldman Sachs in real estate investment banking, and then went into CMBS at Goldman, and then I went to Blackstone in real estate private equity. I kind of had my career in real estate during the eye of the storm, or the beginning of the storm, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. Started my career in 2004, and I left in 2008 to go to business school. So I had the great opportunity to work on the equity office properties buyout, the Hilton Hotels buyout at Blackstone, and then the world ended, at least in the real estate industry. Mm-hmm. and I went to business school. And at Stanford Business School, I just caught the tech bug. So I launched my first company in the early days of Facebook platform. We launched a recruitment network on Facebook targeting blue-collar and semi-skilled jobs the same way you target white-collar jobs on LinkedIn. We raised about $35 million over the course of 2 years, grew pretty quickly. And then Workday, a big public enterprise SaaS company, acquired us in 2014, and we became Workday Recruit. I then launched another company with classmates where we had a very similar product to Uber, a company called Cabify, which we launched in Latin America. Cabify is now the largest ride-sharing service in Latin America in, I think, 90 cities, 15 countries. It's raised nearly half a billion dollars. And then I was considering what to do next, and Brad and I knew each other actually through the Blackstone Network. And we started thinking about, you know, the opportunities in real estate tech for the reasons I mentioned before. And so what we started doing was doing one-off deals privately. We used AngelList actually as a syndicate platform to kind of do ad hoc, kind of subscale venture investing, built a really strong track record. Actually, many of the companies we personally invested in before starting Fifth Wall are now Fifth Wall portfolio company investments, like Clutter. We were actually seed investors in Clutter through AngelList, and then Opendoor as well, which is now obviously a unicorn. We were seed investors there as well. So Brad and I kind of were kicking around this idea, and I think the decision to launch it was kind of a function of, look, this is just a very clear opportunity. And as Brad was talking about before, when we started it, our key priority was building this consortium of major real estate owners. And that was something that had never been done before. Mm. It was kind of a novel idea, independent of real estate. We really hadn't seen any corollary in any other venture capital fund. So it was quite kind of a novel approach when we launched into it.
Great. And so I think then returning to that strategy and what underpins, you know, the very different way in which you have set up Fifth Wall, and you've mentioned it a couple of times, but the fact that you ask your partners and those investors, some of the world's biggest property players themselves, what they want, what they need, what they're looking for, what they think will make their businesses better, more efficient, and then go out, try and find the businesses that fit that, that are ripe for investment, which match those demands. You've touched on it already, and it seems like maybe a sort of a very obvious question, but why is it that that works so well, and why is it that nobody's done it before? It's, you know, it seems odd in so many ways.
It's a great question, is Brendan. It's a great question. I think the reason, I don't have a good reason as to why it wasn't done before. It's kind of a painfully obvious opportunity that if you want to invest in a category of venture investment where the decisions of a very small number of incumbents dictate the outcomes, you would go raise money from the incumbents, right? So that you'd have better selection and better ability to influence those companies. I think if there is a reason why it wasn't done before, it's the sociological point I alluded to earlier, which is there just are not a lot of people in the venture community that come from real estate. Yeah. And so when Brad and I set out to raise capital, we broke the real estate universe up into its major food groups, you know, office, industrial, multifamily hotels, and we wanted to raise capital from one of the biggest, if not the biggest name in each one of those categories. And frankly, just having the connections to get to those executive teams, to get to those leaders was, I think, a big differentiator we had. Mm. And like many things in the real estate industry, once one large corporate did it, you know, yeah, it kind of became easier and easier. It snowballed from there.
Who was signed up first, out of interest?
So the first two LPs were CBRE and Prologis. And then after them, so CBRE, the largest commercial brokerage, Prologis, the largest industrial REIT, then Lennar, the second biggest home builder, then Heinz, third largest mall owner, then Host Hotels, largest hotel owner, then Equity Residential, largest apartment owner, then Lowe's Home Improvement, Rudin Company. So about half the capital was real estate strategics. And then what was interesting was that once we had that strategic capital, so about, it was like 100 or 120 million, once we had that, the financial LPs, the endowments, the pensions, the fund of funds, we actually raised capital very quickly from them. So the next 100 million, we got oversubscribed within months, or really even less than months, because they saw the advantage we would have. I think one other point, Emily, as to why they invested, there's a really powerful network effect of having like-minded, technology-forward corporates in the same fund. Meaning, while the particular companies they might be looking for could be idiosyncratic and specific to their sector, they're now sharing, this is our corporates, are sharing ideas amongst themselves, how they're driving change management internally. How they're looking at certain common technology themes, like, you know, facilities management and energy efficiency.
Yeah.
So in some ways, we've convened this it's almost like a think tank to some extent of really thoughtful, forward-looking real estate corporates that have a similar worldview and are using Fifth Wall to articulate their strategies. And so a lot of deals, we kind of have like cross-fertilization effects, like the same company can be relevant to multiple anchors. And that's very powerful, and it creates leverage in talking to companies. It creates economies of scale and distribution. And frankly, it just makes our lives easier because we increasingly have become like a black hole for information around how corporates are looking to technology to improve their core businesses.
And what are they looking for and looking to and looking at? You know, you're talking there about sort of like crossovers, and that's very interesting. Are you seeing those general themes sweeping across each of those major sectors, or the food groups as you called them? And are there other sort of more sector specific themes emerging, trends emerging, things that people are looking for?
Sure, this is Brad. I mean, I think based on where we are in the tech life cycle, I think everything's on the table right now, which makes this both challenging but also, you know, ultimately extremely interesting. I think the opportunities that provide cross-pollinization, at least from Fifth Wall's perspective, provide, I think, the most opportunity and are honestly the most compelling. But I would say that our corporates really look at the environment as both investing in opportunities that sort of create operational efficiencies as sort of the core component, but also challenge their existing business model, and also provide opportunities for them to, you know, sort of either accelerate or exacerbate their existing business model. So I think it's a combination of two things: sort of identifying existing ways to make them do what they do better, but also challenging sort of the future of their industries and figuring out ways where they can mitigate against the risk that technology poses, but also sort of invest in the opportunities that it creates. I think thematically that touches a whole host of themes, anything from workplace as a service, which can encompass companies like WeWork and Convene and Eden and Managed by Q, short-term rental companies. I think the enterprise value being created in the short-term rental space is pretty dramatic. I think incumbents are looking to capture some of that value in the buildings that they own, and accessing that unique economy that traditionally hasn't been available to them and is becoming more articulated by the day. I think there are, you know, Brendan alluded to facilities management, and energy efficiency is obviously huge. You hear all the time in the press about the smart buildings and buildings of the future. I think there's a lot of work left to be done to really define what that means, but being a part of those conversations and thinking about the opportunities and challenges that creates is really compelling. I think there's definitely been opportunities in and around capital markets. Obviously, real estate capital markets are some of the largest in the world. So the fintech companies that are tackling that space are really compelling on the lending side, insurance side. So essentially, as you can tell, we're really looking at a pretty wide breadth of opportunity in real estate tech. And I think at this stage, everything's fair game because of the relative nascent position we are in terms of sort of the tech adoption and really what types of opportunities these technologies can ultimately create.
And what would you say in terms of the split between commercial and residential, or maybe split's the wrong word, but the kind of the reaction to tech from the commercial and the residential sectors, is it similar, or are you seeing more uptake in one part of the industry than the other? Is one further along? Is one a faster adopter? Or is it sort of much of a muchness?
We look at both. I don't think we have a specific target in mind. I would say to date, our breakdown between commercial and residential has been about 50-50, not by design, but that's just kind of the way it's played out as we've invested. There's huge opportunities in commercial. The dynamics of, having these large corporates is quite obvious, right? When you have, tens of millions of square feet that you can experiment on in our corporate LPs, makes it a lot easier to scale businesses, like BTS, for example.
Yeah.
I think in residential, similar dynamics exist. I mean, for example, Lennar delivers 30,000 new homes a year, which is pretty staggering. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the access that gives you to experiment with different financial technologies related to real estate transactions, particularly a transaction many people are familiar with, buying a home, which is extremely painful, and the process of finding a home, finding a broker, putting a mortgage in place, getting home insurance, getting a home warranty, all of that is extremely complicated. And so just having that access point becomes a really fertile ground for experimentation and the ability to scale companies up very quickly. The common theme, I would say, across both residential and commercial is Fifth Wall invests in situations where we know vis-a-vis an imminent purchase order, an imminent partnership, an imminent distribution deal with one of our corporates, we're going to double or triple the company's revenue in the next 18 months. So there's no such thing as a sure thing in venture. By definition, you're investing in high-risk, high-growth businesses. But I think what we're able to offer that other venture investors can't is certainty of value add, right? So when we step into a company, we are giving that company visibility that we are going to grow your business in the ways you want through access you wouldn't otherwise be able to secure. And that's the most common theme across all of our investments.
Okay, great. Going back to the figure, I mean, $212 million, that's a pretty big sum. And for a real estate specific fund, it's even more significant. Two questions there. I mean, do you think the market was expecting that? Or was it a bit of a bolt from the blue? And were you expecting that? I'm sure you had a goal in mind, but was that what it was? Was that near the mark?
Real estate tech last year, about $3 billion went into just real estate tech. That doesn't even include retail tech, hospitality tech, construction tech. I mean, if you added all those categories together, you're probably talking about somewhere between a $5 and $10 billion space in terms of venture capital invested per year. So, Fifth Wall, while it is large and we're the largest in our category, we represent a very small percentage of the total capital invested in the space. So I think that's kind of the first part of your question. The second part of your question is, when we started out, our view was we want to have enough capital to go after Series A, Series B, and Series C stage companies. And we need the flexibility to invest across different stages and different life cycles of a company's development. And I think, anywhere from, say, $150 to $250 million lets you do that. when we first started out, as you can probably see in our SEC filings, we were initially targeting 150. We got rapidly oversubscribed, largely by the financial investors that wanted to come in. So we increased that to 200 and then again to 212. I don't know what our next fund will look like. I'd expect that it's going to be larger because both generalist VCs as well as Fifth Wall itself, we've just realized the scale of the opportunity is just so vast. The major constraint for us is finding talent and finding amazing deal leads and amazing team members to execute on these opportunities. Because as you can imagine, well, it seems like an amazing opportunity to say, hey, I'm investing in a company knowing that its revenue is going to double or triple, right, in the very near term. There's a lot of hard work that goes into structuring and engineering those deals. And so that's really the opportunity, but it creates a lot of work. So that's why we work incredibly hard on each one of our deals. But I guess the short answer is yes, we think it's a large fund, but a relatively small portion of real estate venture capital market as a whole.
And I do think, Emily, to sort of put an exclamation point on that in regards to your last question, I do think the market was surprised. I think nobody's ever seen something like this before. But to your point earlier, as it relates to sort of your readers' interest, the convergence between real estate and technology is something that we've been reading about and hearing about more and more over the last few years. And I think our timing sort of was perfect in that respect to really provide the world, I think, a great example of when those two industries collide, the opportunities it creates. And I think Fifth Wall is well positioned to really be a thought leader and continuing to push that conversation forward.
Can I add one thing to that, Emily? I think this is just an interesting point. When we announced our fund, one of the most surprising things that we saw was, I'd say, as much, obviously, huge amounts of interest from real estate technology companies, huge amounts of interest from major corporates who are saying, well, you know, why didn't you talk to us? Why couldn't we invest in your fund? But most surprisingly, from generalist VC funds. So pretty much all of like the top 20 generalist VC funds were like, oh my gosh, this is super exciting. Now this category that we really wanted to deploy a lot of capital into and where we know it has this risk profile of huge dependence on the decisions of these incumbents, we now have a fund that can help us mitigate that. So actually a huge portion of our deal flow now comes horizontally from these venture capital funds who refer us deals and say, hey, would CBRE be interested in this? Would Host Hotels, would Macerich be interested in this? And the nice position that puts us in is it really lets us see the entire market and keep our finger on the pulse of what companies are getting financed, where companies are in their development. So the most surprising thing, I think, to us was just how much interest and how the interest level of generalist VCs in partnering with us on our deal flow, opening up rounds, giving us access to their entire portfolio companies.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I've got just a few final questions to ask you on the market sort of generally, but before I do that, and I don't mean to dump around too much for you guys or for our listeners, but I think our listeners probably wouldn't be able to contain themselves any longer without me asking, certainly for our domestic audience here, you know, obviously you're LA-based and are operating within the US, but what are your thoughts beyond the US, looking to Europe, to the UK, both in terms of, you know, investment, but also I'm interested to hear your thoughts generally on the market and on the prop tech market outside of the States and what you think of it.
Well, funny you should ask. We're looking right now at a couple European technology companies. So we look globally. I think there's probably more innovation, you know, in the U.S. as it relates to real estate tech, but we're actually seeing a lot of really interesting opportunities abroad, both from Europe and from Asia. And so we look globally. In terms of what that means for the Fifth Wall franchise going forward, you know, maybe that means we launch a separate fund focused on European corporate LPs and European companies. maybe it means we do it in the same fund. I don't think we yet have a strong view on that, but from a investment perspective and from a capital raising perspective, probably about a quarter of our existing capital is international LPs, some of which have quite a bit of real estate. And I expect a decent percentage, probably somewhere between 15 and 20% of our first fund will be allocated to international companies, probably primarily in Europe.
And I think that interest and exposure, I think, will only grow over time. Obviously, the anchors in our LP base today have significant international real estate exposure. So I think we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we were only focused on innovating in and around sort of, you know, the U.S., because we need to provide technology solutions that have applicability across the globe to ensure we're delivering our anchors exactly what we promised them. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely interested in what's going on in Europe. Brendan's actually headed there this fall for the European Tech Real Estate Tech Week. So we're definitely going to be investing time and resources and thinking more about it.
And obviously, I'm sitting here in London. So when you talk about Europe, where does London and the UK sort of sit within that European marketplace for you?
I mean, I think it's the most important city, at least in terms of providing an ability for technology companies, especially technology companies in the U.S., to sort of have access to the European market as sort of that initial testing ground, creating a real beachhead for them to expand into Europe more broadly. So we've seen that happen with one of our portfolio companies, BTS, and they've had a significant amount of success opening an office and operating out of London. As our other portfolio companies grow and look to expand globally, Clutter is another good example of one that I think has a great view on global expansion. I think London will be a really important beachhead to the broader European markets.
Great. Well, I'm sure our listeners will be delighted to hear that. And in terms of how much you've invested so far, correct me if I'm wrong, it might have moved on from now, but is it still hovering around the $60 million mark, or is it moved on significantly since then?
It's slightly higher because a few investments that we haven't announced, but yeah, it's probably between $60 and $75 million.
And do you have any kind of sense as to what that will look like over the next 6 months in terms of, will we see some sort of similar or sort of anything on, above and beyond that?
We don't target a specific pace. We're much more focused on just, the right opportunities, the right companies. So I don't at this point.
Okay. And so those final few questions I mentioned just around the sort of the scene in general and the feeling and the vibe a bit more. I think that what I've found, certainly here in the UK, but also when I've been in the States and at conferences overseas, it seems to be a bit of sort of a universal issue, is that, tech and real estate tech, prop tech, cre tech, whatever it is that people are calling it, is so exciting. And it's definitely gone through a bit of a phase where it's reached a level of maturity as you'd expect, that we haven't seen before, as is common in any sector that's going on an upward growth trajectory. But with that has come, I think, a lot of noise, and particularly for the property side of the equation, that noise has been a bit overwhelming and a bit confusing. Can you see that yourselves? And I mean, presumably, this is about three questions in one, sorry, but can you see that yourselves? And presumably you see yourselves as a really neat solution to that problem. You're able to join the two together neatly and, effectively and efficiently. So is that the ultimate goal?
I think you are seeing a maturation of real estate technology, kind of like what happened in corporate enterprise software is happening in fast forward in real estate enterprise software. And you are seeing kind of the emergent winners become obvious and become apparent. If you look at our investments to date, I think they have been biased towards the biggest players in each one of their categories. So, for example, VTS in leasing and asset management, Clutter in on-demand self-storage, Opendoor in kind of residential marketplaces and residential liquidity. So I think what that means for a fund like Fifth Wall is we are biased towards kind of the emergent winners. But I think what you will see is consolidation. There's a lot of solutions out there that are targeting specific pain points or specific applications for real estate owners. I would argue in some cases too many. And the challenge a property manager has or an owner has is logging into too many different platforms. This is consistent with what happened in the early days of enterprise software. And what happened in enterprise software, a handful of major incumbents consolidated the space. Now, that wasn't a value-destructive dynamic. It actually created a lot of value, and it created tons of opportunity both for the incumbents and for the kind of smaller point solutions. And I think the same will be true in real estate tech. I think what will be different is that it's just its maturation is happening faster than corporate enterprise software. And so that's why our view is the time is now, right? Like this is topical, this is imminent, it's happening. The earth is kind of shifting underneath our feet. And that's why we wanted to have a fund at scale to make sure we could identify, invest in, support, and frankly just have a hand in shaping this transformation of real estate. Because the next 5 to 10 years are going to see a complete reimagination and reconstitution of what it means to be a property owner and a property manager because of technology. So that's why, you know, in answer to one of your earlier questions, that's why we think the time is now.
And for you guys, in terms of, I mean, you've obviously come from backgrounds where you've not only got, you know, property experience, but you have tech experience, and you also have experience in terms of, you know, investment and, you know, high risk investment as well. So, I mean, and you sound so kind of smooth and together, which, you know, is great. But I just wonder, have there been any moments over the last, I don't know, 18 months where you've looked at each other and just gone either, I can't believe this is happening, or are we really doing this? Or has it all been sort of so strategically planned out that you kind of, you knew that once you got onto this path, it was probably going to end up being okay?
Yeah, it's definitely the second. Brendan and I have been thinking about this for quite some time, and I think executing on that strategy, I think is what we've been corely focused on. So I don't think there's ever been any moments where we've actually sat, like, looked at each other and sort of been like, oh, it's time to celebrate, just because to us it just always seemed like a very well laid out plan, an enormous opportunity, and one that we wanted to capture in short order. So, you know, I think based on our backgrounds as sort of institutional investors, that's how we approach everything. And it's, I think it's part of the reason why we were actually able to attract the capital that we did from the partners that we have. So I think we're pretty methodical about executing. And I think Fifth Wall, at least the progress that we've made to date, I think is just a direct result of that. At some point, I think we need to take a step back and appreciate all that we've accomplished. But right now, there's just too much opportunity sitting in front of us, and we're sort of corely focused on making that a reality.
Great. One thing that did surprise us is that this dynamic of creating kind of a multi-corporate fund, of having this multi-corporate model where you have many different incumbents from the same industry that are collaborating with each other, I think that is something we pioneered in creating Fifth Wall. I think what's actually been surprising to us is that a handful of incumbents from other industries, other what I would call asset-heavy industries that have similar dynamics, where a handful of incumbents can heavily influence the outcomes around technology adoption, they've approached us. We've said no, but they've approached us and said, can you do this for us? And that includes industries like energy, agriculture, retail, infrastructure. So what's been surprising, I think, to us is that, frankly, a fund with this model didn't really exist before. And so we feel really fortunate that we have a category that real estate tech that has clear secular industry tailwinds and where this dynamic is really valuable. But it has been surprising that in other industries, such a model has not been created because it actually makes a lot of sense for these asset-heavy industries that have huge dependence around what the incumbents are going to do and not do as it relates to technology adoption.
And finally, I think that, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the huge opportunities that there are within this sector, within real estate, and the sort of investments that are being made and the big players involved. But you guys have, there is now an accelerator program, and I think that, you know, a lot of our listeners, again, and our readers, you know, are startups and are coming from a lower base, and, you know, I think they'd be interested just to hear what your thoughts are on that too, you know, catching those bright, young, sparky businesses from the off. Ooh, hello?
Yeah, sorry. We were just deciding who's going to answer the question.
I wonder whether at the last hurdle I'd lost you and that was it, and that would be the end of the podcast.
So what the Accelerator program is designed to do is let Fifth Wall invest in companies that would be too early for us to look at with our current kind of main fund mandate. So as I mentioned, our main fund mandate is we look for situations where one of our corporate like anchors is adopting or partnering or signing a distribution deal with a technology, and we have clear visibility into that value catalyst event, right? So that is kind of what we do. That is our main fund activity. But in so doing, we saw that we were missing a lot of really amazing companies, amazing entrepreneurs that were earlier in their life cycle. Their product was still being formed. They were still refining their business model. They hadn't yet launched. They were still in the experimentation phase. But we're actually, the relationships we have and the distribution and the credibility we now have could be really valuable to them. And so what we wanted to do is select a relatively small cohort of companies at the very early stage where kind of the clay is still wet, and we could influence those companies. We could help put them in front of corporates they wouldn't otherwise have access to. And this is kind of, we've seen a lot of, you know, real estate tech accelerators and incubators out there. I think what we haven't seen are those that can consistently put their companies in front of the must-have would-be largest customers for their technologies so that they can kind of back-solve what those corporates need to build the right solution. So the intent of the Accelerator program is to just go very early and support companies at that inceptive stage where frankly, what we built for our main fund can be equally applicable to a seed or a pre-seed company.
Okay. Great. And absolutely finally, Brendan, you stand by your quote that in real estate, every idea is a good idea. Is that in real estate tech? Is that still the case? Do you still believe that?
Probably a little too broad that every idea.
Almost every idea.
I would say most ideas are good ideas. And that's just simply a function of when you're improving over inefficiency, it's fairly easy to innovate, right? So there's so many aspects of the real estate industry that are so obviously and patently inefficient that, like, it's very clear that a particular solution is better than that. But oftentimes you have many similar solutions solving the same pain point, oftentimes with pretty analogous products. So we see that a lot, where there's lots of great companies, and the big question is, who's going to be adopted by one of the major incumbents?
And Emily, I'll give you a concrete example. We actually, as part of our fundraising effort, whenever we'd walk into a building owned by the individual that we're going to meet to raise money from, we'd, you know, try to essentially take the log, the physical log at the front desk where vendors would sign in, and we'd bring that up to the meeting and essentially tell them, you know, it's because you guys lack technology, I can literally walk out the door with, you know, 12 months of vendor log data that you will lose forever just because you don't have this available in the cloud. I think this is a really simple example of what what you are competing against, which is in many cases just a physical ledger, or even more, I think advanced, an Excel document. So these are just kind of, fun examples of how far behind some of our real estate brethren are, and the opportunity essentially just literally sitting on their front desk.
Well, that seems like a great point to end. There's no greater sentiment, I think, for people listening to this than almost or most ideas in real estate tech are good ideas. So thank you so much to both of you, Brennan and Brad, for joining me, today where you are and this evening where I am. And thanks very much and good luck with the next 4-5 months.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.